This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Welcome, everybody, to episode of 147 of the Valiant Central Podcast. If this isn't episode 147, then somebody's going to have to dub in the correct number, because I'm not going to look it up right now. Joining me today, Martin had to cancel at the last minute. He's busy with, busy people stuff. So another busy person, Ronnie Barron, is joining me. Literally just walked in the door, threw on a headset, and started yakking.
Yep.
Also with me, another very busy person from the Collecting Valiant podcast, which comes out, is it once every quarter now? Is that how often you guys are coming out?
Be nice.
Dewan Hammonds. Hammond. Is there an S on the end of that?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, Hammonds. I was right the first time. Then I doubted.
So, like, you don't even know your last name.
This is episode 147.
140. I got it right. Look at that. I know my shit. Ding, 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 ding. I know what I did last week. I know what I'm doing this week. We are three episodes away from the big episode 150. We plan to have some special non-celebrity guests on that episode. Some ghosts of Valiant Central guests past will be joining us. Still putting the piece together, but we should get a few. We'll have a few extra people on here.
We're three episodes early, Dewan.
Damn, we could have made it an open bar episode.
Well, you know, when Martin's gone, I'd like to have a party cast every chance I get, because, you know, I tried to get a couple more people on here, and they both, one of them was going to join us, but then he had something come up at the last minute, and the other one was on the West Coast, and he just wasn't going to be home quite in time for joining us. But it is game two of the World Series. The Dodgers just tied it up with a one-run home run off of Jock Peterson's bat. That is the sports talk until they take the lead, and then I will stop paying attention to whatever you two are saying and start talking baseball again. That's what you get, Martin, when you don't show up.
Go Yankees.
Go Yankees indeed. But before we get started, because I know me, and I know I will forget if we put it off to the end, but I wanted to start off by thanking our patrons for the podcast. So we have seven patrons currently. Well, one of them it's two names on it, so we think both of them. I guess Martin usually says the first name and the last initial of the name. I'm very tempted to pull a Simpsons and, like, do the reverse. Like, did you guys ever see that Simpsons where he was taught, he was like, Lisa S. No, wait, that's too obvious. L. Simpson.
Yeah.
One of those things, yeah. I'm tempted to do that, but I won't, because apparently people like to be anonymous. I don't know. So Julian F., you know, no relations to somebody else with an F, I'm sure. But Myloa is acting up again. Certainly not a guest on this episode. Michael S., Travis W., Mike C., J.L., and Justin E. and Rowan R. That's the twofer that we got going on there. Thank you to all of you guys for contributing to the podcast. And I would just like you to all know that you helped pay for, well, I guess my first month of the patron basically bought the Rapture trade paperback. So thank you guys for Rapture. I'm looking forward to reading it without the watermark in the middle of it. And that is our patron. Anybody who wants to can join our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/ I think it's patreon.com/ValiantCentral. No the, just Valiant Central.
You can also go to NerdyLegion.com.
Yeah, come on, join us for $5. Yeah, you go to NerdyLegion.com and get a link to it there. You can also find all of our other wonderful Nerdy Legion podcasts that way. As I mentioned, Dewan is from Collecting Valiant. Ronnie is from every other podcast altogether. So
Dewan's also on Open Bar with me, so he's got two.
So Ronnie, what's going on?
Just walked in, put headset on, and here we are, buddy.
Really? You excited about anything exciting in Valiant lately?
Everything is exciting in Valiant lately. I did
see an exciting tweet that got me excited.
How excited were you, Ronnie?
I was actually pretty excited because it hadn't even been announced yet, but B. Clay Moore tweeted out a piece of art that he got in his email, and it had dinosaurs on it.
Oh,
For Savage 2?
That's what we're guessing, but not 100% sure. He didn't confirm or deny those reply tweets, but it sure looked like Savage.
Nice.
Yeah, Savage. He's a nice guy, too. Like, if you ever talked, like, interact with him,
yeah.
He's a super, super nice guy.
Yeah, he's a super cool dude.
And Dinosaurs. Uh-oh, Savage 2. Yeah, because Savage 1 kind of just left everybody hanging, didn't it?
Left him in the middle of London Square, right?
At the Piccadilly.
Yeah. Do you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we hear you.
Okay, my internet's... We're getting a lot of rain right now, so my internet's acting a little bit funny on top of everything else. So who knows? Maybe it'll just be you guys hosting the podcast when I drop off because my internet dies or something.
It's
we'll
an open bar takeover.
My son is already calling for us again. so Valiant, we just mentioned Ronnie was mentioning the tweets from B. Claymore. I can't wait for Savage too. I really like Savage. I think that's been one of the newer things that's been most exciting. Have you guys read Eternity yet?
I have.
Maybe. Yes, I have. Me likey too. Me likey.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a number one, right? But it's not your usual number one where it didn't really feel new reader friendly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with it coming on the tails of the Trilogy of Divinity, it's obviously this has taken it somewhere else that, isn't as familiar territory as what we saw in Divinity. It's taken us to a whole new world, basically. It has that kind of build up feel to it. Like, you will probably, obviously we've all read all of Divinity, so we don't know what it's like reading it without having read it. But if you're just jumping into it, you might feel a little lost. But I'm guessing that they're going to kind of put the pieces together as it goes, which I always prefer it when comics do that and they don't spend too much time rebuilding what's already transpired, Mm-hmm. I kind of like that feeling dumped into the middle of a new place sometimes,
Right.
Did it remind you of Warriors of Plasm from the Defiant era? Like the color scheme and...
A little bit, yeah, now that you say that.
Yeah, like the colors and... I don't want to spoil it, but like some of the themes, like in the middle of the book to the end, it kind of... Like Paul said, you said like the different world aspect, it did remind me of that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of reference to Kirby's New Gods stuff as being influenced for this too. And I haven't read any of that myself, but just the Matt Kent himself has made comments of that, but kind of his reverence for what Jack Kirby created. So
yeah, I can definitely see that as well. Really,
yeah. And I never read the Defiant stuff. But yeah,
you don't need.
I think the relations probably go back. Don't worry, I won't. So we'll just avoid that. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of news. We got a few new series that are starting before too long. With Ninja K is not too far down the road. In December, so a couple months away, we got Harbinger War Zero coming out. I was just looking through my emails today and saw the Valiant's kind of little press release blurb about that, saying that it is something that will add more to it for readers who went through the trouble of getting it, but it's not a required read for Harbinger Wars 2. So anybody who doesn't get it or new fans that maybe pick up with Harbinger Wars 2, they won't be missing out on anything. So I'm kind of glad that they called that out because I know people get a little tense about possibly missing out on something, like they did with the Geomancer book.
Oh, yeah.
But, just like with the Geomancer book, this stuff is findable after the fact. I had a set. I no longer had a set. Now I have a set again, thanks to you, Ronnie.
You're welcome.
So, Thank you. It's very much appreciated.
I did have a question.
The plus
though,
by knowing other people.
I had a question for both of you. Mm-hmm. They tried the new thing with Valiant High, right, for 5 issues, and it was only on Comixology.
Uh-huh.
And it hasn't came out for a while. So do you think it's, like, dead, or is it taking the break for a while like we did with Rye or Renegade or whatever?
It was just a limited series. That's what it was intended to be. I believe it was even just 4 issues, but I could be wrong about that. I know I read it all. Did you do Comixology Unlimited, Ronnie? Are you doing that right now?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I did a free month of that, and that was one of the things that I read because it was on Comixology Unlimited. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Same here, buddy. I enjoyed the crap out of it. It was just different, and I kind of liked seeing the little kid-ish take on it, like for Sammy's age or... Well, I guess it's a little bit older for him still, but, just those, it's like pushing out for new readers type thing in the kids genre area. And I think like with Divinity being the mechanic kid, you know, I thought it really crossed over really good. Like they transitioned the characters and nothing really felt out of place.
Yeah, and I thought up to that point, that was the most human they made Livewire come across. Like that's the most I ever felt connected with her. And they even had that issue of Unity that was just all about Livewire. They had that arc of Unity that was focusing in on each character of Unity and kind of telling their story as an individual. Even that one felt impersonal to me, but right. Valiant High made her feel much more personal. And you know, Secret Weapons went, you know, far beyond that. Like Secret Weapons was just the best. I think that has taken Livewire further than anything else has.
Agreed.
But yeah, I was surprisingly entertained by that. I thought it was pretty darn good. And it was nice to be able to connect to the different characters sort of in a different way. It was just a fun thing. It was good. Did you read it, Duan?
Yeah, I thought it was a perfect, like, masterful way of like introducing maybe the tweener crowd and the high school crowd into the Valiant universe, because it just didn't spoon feed you the back history of all the characters. It kind of made it into like this high school-y Valleydale type of, I don't know if Valleydale is the right word, but you know, kind of
Riverdale
like a high school
style.
Riverdale. There you go. There you go. Same difference. Valleydale is an old nightclub here in the city. So sorry. But yeah, it was a great way. Like if you read that and say I'm interested in these characters, and you go back and you read the serious books, you know, their own like Divinity and you know other books in Valiant, it was a great introduction. It wasn't like force fed to you. It told you a little bit about each character and stuff about them in a neat little cute story or whatnot. I liked it a lot. I did.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
It gives you a taste of all the characters with so if you like something, then you can go from there. And yeah, you know, I can see it being intimidating to dive into Valiant Comics characters if you don't really know where to start with. So I mean, we know that there have been other series that have been presented in a way to appeal to the non-traditional Valiant audiences, right? Like Faith. There was another one that was Gen Zero. You know, those, even with them kind of appealing to different crowds, it was a really kind of focused, narrow story. And I think that this kind of did a better job of giving a taste of stuff to people without it being too much pressure. It's, you know, here's a smorgasbord of everything presented in kind of a different way. One thing that was interesting, bringing up Faith, so Jake Ingman, big Valiant fan, he was out visiting. I believe he's still even out here right now. He's visiting in Maine, so I got to meet him. You know, not often do people come to Maine for, you know, many reasons that I know from Valiant fandom, but So I met up with Jake. We ran around to some comic shops and stuff, and we were talking about Faith some, and he was kind of disappointed with Faith in the Future Force, which I find it entertaining, but I get his point where he was hoping that it was going to be something more substantial and see more of the team, you know? And it is kind of a small circuit. It's a story, you know. It's kind of like in Bloodshot Reborn, how when you get later on in the series, you get the arcs that are, you know, like one is, what is that movie called? I always blank on this damn movie now.
Which movie?
Mad Max. One is Mad Max feeling. Right. Yeah, I don't know why I can never remember that movie. You know, so you get that in Bloodshot Reborn, and I know like Martin always said like he wasn't a big fan of once the series got to there because it was just telling stories, and they gave a reason that they tied together. But that's kind of what Faith in the Future Force is. It's not really building a team or building the characters. It's just this little story.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge Faith fan, but I enjoyed it because I enjoyed Neela from Ivar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was glad to see her back, and you know, it's like one of those kind of like Valiant High type thing, you know what I mean, like we were talking about. It's just, it wasn't one of the top tier books, but it wasn't ever bad either. It was just a good read.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it. It was always an entertaining story to read. And I, you know, right to your point, I think aside from Faith and Neela, every other character's involvement is kind of, they're more of a prop than anything.
Yeah, like a plot point.
They're just there. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but yeah, Neela and Faith are the two that are substantial. But I think getting Neela back in the game is the best part of it, because I mean, Faith has always been around. She's always been involved in stuff. So it's not like she's gone away for a while, like Neela did. But I think that's kind of, you know, pulling a thread back into prominence here. So hopefully that, you know, this is a sign of things to come, and maybe we can get something that is an ongoing or more substantial. Because yeah, I think Neela is a great character, and that's a character that there's a lot more to explore. You know, whereas with Ivar, there had been some groundwork laid for Ivar already. Plus, we also the history of the character going back, even though VEI isn't building off of the history of VH1, there was still some, you know, there was groundwork laid from VH1 of Ivar.
Right.
Whereas Neela is totally new, so they could do a lot of different things with her. And I mean, a lot of the best stuff Valiant has been doing lately has been with characters that are new creations. They're not spun out of the old properties, you know? So, yeah, I think they could do a lot with Neela. She's always a character that I enjoyed as well.
Yep. I'm going to bring you guys. Go ahead, DeJuan.
When I read the first issue, I got really excited because it seemed like it was going to kind of pick up from Ivar Timewalker.
Yep.
But as the issues came on, you're like, I felt really disappointed. Like you said, Paul, you thought the supporting characters would have more of an impact in the story, but they were just, like you said, props. It kind of let me down in that aspect.
Yeah, it's kind of just a little timey-wimey story, right? Like, it's just, here's what happens when you play with time. And, you know, I don't know. It's focusing on like a type of story you could tell with time travel that is the least interesting thing to me. I mean, it's okay. It's an okay story, but it's focusing on like what happens when you play with time rather than just, you know, telling a story that involves time traveling. It's focusing too much on the details and getting kind of cute with what you can do with it, right? They keep on overlapping this. They keep on trying to tweak it a little bit. But it makes it feel repetitive. It makes it feel like you're just reading the same thing over and over. I actually argued with Travis about this when he was on it, pretty much for the sake of arguing, because it's not like I had the strongest of feelings about it. But because, you know, he was saying that he was frustrated with issue 2 because it didn't really get anywhere. So I argued with him for like 20 minutes about how it was necessary to build the feel of the story. And
the Groundhog Day effect of it.
Yeah, exactly. But if Bill Murray was in this, it'd be much better. I think that's what it's.
Bill Murray makes everything better.
Yeah, but how does it tie into Harbinger War 2? Because it seems like Valiant is really being, they're trying to tie all their stories in, other than the Valiant High stories, into what's going to happen in Harbinger Wars 2. So maybe I'm just being naive, but how's it gonna fit in? I mean, because we're all saying like, it's kind of disappointing, or it was just like an offshoot story, but I don't think it's an offshoot story. I think it's going to play in somewhere, somehow, along down the line a little bit.
See, to me, the only way I can think of it tying in, and I could be totally wrong, which I probably am, but it's just to reintroduce us to Aang and Neela. So, like, if they do show up in Harbinger Wars 2, then they're fresh on our mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you would think you would tell a better story. It's almost like they're trying. You think it's like almost they're trying to explain how time travel works, because it's going to impact Harbinger War 2 at some point. And it's probably going to be at the end, where some kooky fluke thing in time travel is going to change the Harbinger War 2, the battle, the epic battle. It's going to come in and flip the scene, or flip the scenario, to where it's going to change it and set everything right, or whatnot, or set the universe going forward a certain way.
Now,
that's kind of how I thought about it.
Do you think that you're down on it because we just got a time story with Stalinverse, so fresh from that?
I didn't think about
it. Well, see, Stalinverse wasn't a time travel story, though. It was like a parallel universe story.
Well, yes, technically, in the timey-wimey way. But I you're right. Okay.
I agree with you, Ronnie. It's now that you think about it, now that you said that, you got two timey-wimey stories here, right? You got Faith in the Future Force and all the stuff that happened in Ivar. And then you've got this timey-wimey stuff with Divinity, right?
It's not timey-wimey. It's parallel universes. Respect the parallel universes. Totally different.
I see what you're saying, Paul, but damn it. Even in Divinity, they're talking about... What's wilderness? Is this eternity you're not about to say this?
No, actually, you are kind of right with Divinity and all that, about how they said that they have the ability to... They basically move to any page in the story at any time. They're kind of
right.
Yeah, so you are right there. There is an element of that. Like in Faith in the Future Force or in Ivar, the time travel is the prominent aspect. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Divinity, it's more like that's the
backdrop.
It's like the Bleeding Monk, where the Bleeding Monk kind of exists across this thread all at once.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of more like that, where it is an aspect, but that's not the primary focus, you know. Whereas like with the other one, like the focus of the story is on the time travel. But yeah, you are right. I mean, they did move around in time in Divinity.
Yep.
And even in Divinity, you saw, you know, didn't he say, well, you're not supposed to be here. This is not right. And I'm gonna let, you know, in Stalinverse, I'm gonna let this, you know. What were the fighting lady groups? What were they called? Damn it.
The Red Brigade?
The Red Brigade, yeah. You know, he's going to let certain aspects of them stay in the universe, blah, 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 blah. And then, damn it. Didn't he say something about Exo, like you're not supposed to be here?
That was in Divinity Zero.
Right.
When Divinity saw Exo on Gorin.
Yeah, he's like, you're not supposed to be here. Right. So that's what triggered me to say, like, you know, Valiant's kind of hinting at, you know, these time travel and trying to explain what time travel and things are, manipulation with time travel is. So that's kind of how I brought them both together. Long story short.
Yeah, I gotcha.
I'm not even drinking beer, and I came up with that.
What?
That's kind of cool.
Ah, See, I'm off my. I'm used to recording with Martin, and he carries the conversation mostly, and I could just argue the whole time, so I don't have to pay attention. So I was like, it's cool because I'm going to be watching the World Series game, and it doesn't really matter because whatever he says, I'll just argue with it. And then he bails on me, so I'm like, ah.
So then he throws you a curveball.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Hey, if you watch this World Series, you watch this World Series, and me and Ronnie will turn this into open bar really fast.
Well, you can't have open bar if none of us are drinking, though.
Should I play the Daryl role and just start talking about all the times I got late when I was 20?
Oh. And the Uber Eats, you got to get some Uber Eats going, yeah.
I have not been on open bar without Daryl talking about what it was like to get laid in the 1940s.
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Home run!
No way.
3-1 Dodgers.
Damn it.
Aaron had a question.
What did he have?
Paul?
Do you want...
Paul celebrate. Talk to me, Ronnie. Talk to me, Ronnie. Paul celebrate.
Did Aaron ask another question or just the first one?
Just the first one.
So Aaron asked, what was my favorite baseball card? Is that what he asked?
The most prized baseball card.
Most prized. Have either of you ever collected baseball cards or any other sports cards?
Yes.
Hell yes. Yes.
Yes.
Guys, start. Wait, what card do you remember the most from collecting? Did you guys collect as kids? Did you ever collect as adults?
I have both.
Mm-hmm.
And my most prized card that I ever had was a Bob Gibson rookie card.
Oh, nice.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm a Cardinals fan, but
yeah. I had an old one. I forgot who he was. But I think at the time, the one I was most excited about, I had an 89 Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck rookie card, and I had him sign it. I went to a card show, and he signed it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was mine.
Those memories are even better, when you get those memories. So I collected as a kid, then I didn't collect for a long time, then I collected for a couple of years as an adult, and then I got out of that because it was a lot of money, and I had started getting into comics too, and I was like, well, they both cost money, but comics, you're also paying for entertainment value, so
kind of
makes sense to me. As a kid, I would say that my favorite cards that I had, because I never had anything that was real valuable. I bought a lot of cheap stuff as a kid, because as a kid, you want quantity. The Nolan Ryan cards I had were my favorite cards.
That was awesome.
I think he was still playing baseball some, but it was definitely past his prime towards the end of his career. But he was just always a legend. And his cards kind of told his story. So that's how I was familiar with Nolan Ryan was through cards. I never had anything real valuable. I mean, I was always a Dodgers fan. So of course, my Dodgers cards, but none really stood out big time. As an adult, my favorite baseball – I didn't buy as many baseball cards because that's – as far as collecting goes, that was my least favorite to collect. Because, in baseball, I really only like the Dodgers. I'm not, a bigger baseball – I wouldn't be watching the World Series if the Dodgers weren't in it. But I did have a Clayton Kershaw autograph card that I bought from my card shop at one point. That was probably my favorite baseball card.
That's cool.
Yeah.
One thing, and then we can get off the baseball card thing.
You guys there?
When I was...
Yeah.
Yeah, can you hear me? Paul?
All right. Hey, just keep going, Ronnie. He'll jump in. He's got that Missouri...
yeah, my internet's bad because of the storm. Sorry, guys.
No, you're good.
No, you're fine.
I don't know how much you heard of what I said. Do you hear me now?
We heard the whole thing. We've heard all of you, yeah. So one of my main possessions right now, ball card related wise, my dad and I didn't really get along when I was a kid and through the teenage years. But, baseball brought us together, especially the home run chase with Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire.
Mm-hmm.
So for 1 year for Father's Day, He got me. He got four cards in a four-card frame. But at the same time, I got the same four-card frame with different four cards in it. And we totally didn't know. But we both got a Babe Ruth card and then a Sammy Sosa card. Or a Roger Maris card and then a Sammy Sosa card and a Mark McGwire card.
Damn.
But, I mean, like the Babe Ruth and Roger Maris obviously were reprints or whatever. But
right.
So we gave each other the same gift of the four-card home run chase thing, and we didn't even know.
That oh, that's awesome.
So, like, when this episode comes out, I'll tweet out a picture of it. It's in my office at work.
Look at you.
But, yeah, I would say sentimental value, that's probably the card thing that I have that's... because I haven't really collected cards forever.
You know what? Now that you talk about it, you know what my first kind of cards I got was when I first started collecting as a kid? It was a 1985 Topps traded set with the Jose Canseco.
Oh, yeah. Rookie card?
Traded. Yeah. Like yeah. His traded rookie card. It had Bobby Bonilla in there.
Yeah.
Though, was it Bonds?
Bonds was. Did it have the big black?
Border on the top.
Border on the top. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was the traded set, so right, it was like the supplemental set.
It was the updated set at the end.
Yeah, right? And the red and white box that was valuable. I loved that. That Canseco card made it worth it.
Yeah.
You know the whole nine. That was my favorite. That's what got me in there. So
back
and Martin's going to kill us. He's going to kill us for talking baseball cards.
That's all right. We can go back to Valiant now. Oh, crap. Paul disconnected, and I just lost the... it said recording finished.
Oh, damn it.
Let me hang up, and I'll call you guys right back.
All right.
All right, it started again.
Okay.
So
we're back. We're not talking baseball cards anymore. We're talking Valiant.
That's right. So what are you most excited about right now, Valiant-wise?
You know, we haven't recorded Collecting Valiant a lot, and I don't want to spoil what we're going to talk about. So there's a lot of, like,
You don't have to... you don't have to talk to, like, about the collected part of it, just, like, a series-wise or whatnot.
Yeah, there's some Harbinger Renegade books that have super low print runs that are cool. And the metal books, you know, we've got the second one, and then Ninja K is coming out and whatnot. So I'm excited about that because I think we're all burnt out. I think EXO really kicked our ass.
And, because it had 27 different covers? Is that right? Or 21?
Yeah, poor Justin, man. You know, he's got to get them all. And he's burnt out.
He is the collector.
He's burnt out. You know, my man Justin moved, so... You know, we've been kind of burnt
Jim,
out.
You mean?
Hmm? Jim. Yep, my man Jim. Yeah. Damn it. But there's a lot of cool shit from New York Comic Con that we want to talk about. So that's what I'm excited about. But I'm still gearing up for Harbinger War, man. So kind of what my previous comments were, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how all these books tie into Harbinger Wars, too.
Right,
and that's like the nice chase for me, I'm kind of like being detective. So when we talk about Faith in the Future Force, I'm like, how does it tie in, you know?
Right.
Because, you know,
like the big spider web.
Yeah.
Right? What goes with what, and how does this fit into that?
Yeah, because you know, Valiant. You know, at times it seems like especially like with the Bloodshot books, they'll extend it out maybe an arc or two more than what it should be. And you kind of feel disappointed at the end, or they may wrap it up really quick at the end, and you're like, really? You know, that last issue where you're looking for the big crescendo, you know, and you're like, it's kind of disappointing. So I'm not so much looking at the individual issues as being like entertaining or like telling me something revealing. I'm looking at the whole story as a whole,
right.
How's it going to tie in? Because I think that's what their goal is now, in my mind. You know,
they're reshifting focus.
Yeah,
do you think?
Yeah, they're all pointing to one target, so they're trying to take it's everything's really wide now. Everything they try to tell up until this point is really wide, and it's all over the place. And I think they're going to try to narrow it into a point.
Stay on target. Yeah, and I agree with you because I think like at relaunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you only had those four books come out. And then when they hit, it gave them liberty to do other things, right?
Right.
Or feel free to do other things, but in that narrow scope. And then as they got more popular and bigger, you can get wider with different things.
Right.
But now, like you said, it's to the point where, you know, we had trial and error type stuff, right? Valiant High, which we talked about, was a trial and error because they'd never done that before,
right?
Mm-hmm. So then, once you get wide in the scope of things, and now I think you guys are right, like everything's starting to come back.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know how they do it from a creative side, you know. Because, you know, they want to introduce new characters, like they brought Divinity in, you know, and they're trying to bring, like, Rampage in and do all this other stuff and still yet try to tie it all in to tell this big story. Like, they're letting us know we're going to tell this one big story and it's all going to tie in, but yet they're still trying to build the universe at the same time. So it's like you're trying to focus in, stay on target, but then you kind of expand out. So you got, like, Savage and Britannia. Like, how's that all going to play in? I mean, because they're all over the place, man. You're talking about going in the past, in the future, nowadays.
Well, and kind of, what, 2 years ago on Free Comic Book Day, we got, or was it last year when Psylord's coming soon, we got, right?
Right.
Well, just like we got before, like I said, like what we were talking about before, the Twitter thing with B. Clay Moore, he just tweeted that out, right? It's October 2017. We might not see Savage 2 until 2019, right?
That's terrible.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, why? I mean, I understand, you know, having a story planned out 2 or 3 years in advance, but having artwork 2 years in advance?
Well, I'm just saying, maybe it's this time next year before we actually get issue one.
Yeah,
right?
I see what you're saying.
Because Harbinger Wars 2 is going to be the summer event, right?
Yeah.
So then everything else will be the fallout or whatever.
Well, I hope it's not BS. Yeah, that BS makes sense. Hey, Paul. But I'm hope back. They don't
yeah,
break.
I switched to my phone. I think this will probably be better.
But talk about Savage. I hope they don't bring you back cheesy just to insert him into Harbinger Wars 2 really quickly. I think they did a really good job with the first series. And to bring him back like half-ass just to fit him in to the current Harbinger War story would be it'd be disappointing to me, really.
Yeah, I think like Ronnie just said, we'll probably see Savage after Harbinger Wars 2 because they're not going to want to force him in there. I don't think it would really add anything if they did force him in there, you know. So that makes sense. Right.
If we did, it might be like a panel or two cameo spot at the end, you know, in London or whatever with Ninjak there. But I don't think it'll be – I don't think he'll be a main player in it.
Yeah, that was one of the problems with, you know, Unity and VH1, I thought, was that they forced everybody into it. And some of the characters just felt awkward. They didn't feel like they belonged there, and they were just kind of finding something for them to do. But, you know.
Do you think that was because of the editor thing that you guys talked about a couple of episodes back?
In VH1?
How awkward it was.
No, I'm talking about VH1 Unity, yeah.
Oh,
which I guess you could say was an editor thing, though, because it was a shooter thing. But even like, you know, when they did it in VH1, it was, they were making a very firm statement about the scope of the universe, and I think that was you know, a positive thing that they did it that way, even if it did feel kind of forced. But, you know, just if after that, like now, if they force characters into stuff now, it feels awkward. But what you mentioned about the editor things, that was something that Aaron had mentioned to us from when he was at NYCC. And the specific example he gave was War Mother, that arc of Unity, and that it was just
Warmonger.
Monger, yeah, sorry, thank you. And that it kind of the editor kind of ran what they wanted into a place they didn't want it to go, and it kind of ruined it. So you know, that's I think that now that you know, from what Aaron was saying, if it's all true.
Sorry. Sorry, guys.
Then one of the pluses of what we're seeing now and heading into Harbinger Wars 2 is that if Dinesh and Warren have really taken the reins firmly under their control, we're going to see a much more unified vision of stuff. So we're not going to see stuff being kind of like sloppily put together and forced together. Like, you know, we have seen some of that over that, like, you know, year and a half. That, you know, they just kept on adding more stuff.
Right.
So.
Right.
Now, tell me this. I read a book about a month ago. Was it War Mother or another book? There are some new editors, like co-editors, that Valiant's using. So I know we talked about the Warmonger issue, but isn't there, like, some other editors coming on board?
I know
they are now. Yes.
Yeah, I think they're starting to add people back in, but they're probably. I mean, from what Aaron said, this is all kind of speculating on just little comments without having followed up on it or gotten any other comments about it. But you know, that you need more editors to be able to grow your scope of stuff, and to be able. I mean, even just with six books, because of the fact that part of the reason that Valiant's able to be successful in the quality that they do in the release schedule and everything, like they've never released a comic late. They've released, you know, hardcovers and stuff like that late, but that's a different story. Right. It's because they have that scope and they're looking so far out in advance. They have stuff ready to print before it's needed, which is why they, you know, stuff like B. Clay Moore can share art for a book that we're probably not going to see for a year. Right. So for them to be able to have that kind of scope into the future, you know, even with only six books, if they have to focus 100% on the here and now, how far can they look into the future? So they start getting new editors in, and instead of, you know, getting them in and letting them loose too soon, maybe they stick with them more and they keep involvement in it and, you know, really grow it as a team. I think it's one of the things in earlier VEI that we saw a lot of, like, kind of team unity, and even, you know, when writers weren't writing crossovers, they weren't writing stuff that was going to work together, they still knew what was going on in other people's stuff, and they have those retreats. They used to always tweet about those retreats that they would have, and I haven't seen a tweet about that in a while, so I don't know if they did that, you know, the last year when they, I mean, maybe I just thought and got used to it, and so I forgot about it, but you know, they need that unity of vision. So any editors they bring in, like, it's going to be better if they really work with those editors and they're all on the same page. And you get the, you know, the other people's input, but the vision still has to fit together, you know? Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about that a lot from the standpoint of writers, like, you know, especially talking about Dysart and why didn't he do Renegade? And as great as a writer as he is, if his vision didn't fit in with the overall vision that they wanted, you know, sometimes even some of the greatest creators aren't going to create the right thing for the overall picture, even if that one title would have been better than it could have, than, you know, it ended up being or whatever. So I don't know. I just hope that they do keep the, you know, a tighter constraint on the quality across titles, so you don't get this kind of fracturing of stuff that it felt like we had for that time frame.
Yeah. You know, at some point, somebody sent me I don't know if it was a tweet, a picture, like maybe a dry erase board from one of those meetings you were talking about, Paul. Mm-hmm. And it kind of had some things redacted on it, but it was kind of telling how everything fit in. You know, and there was names out there. Maybe Savage was on there at some point before Savage was known to come out. I want to look at that again and kind of see if what we can tie together. Like,
yeah, see how much stuff came to fruition. Yeah,
yeah. How much of it was misinformation? How much of it, you know, is actually coming together and what maybe some of that redacted stuff is.
It's always cool to go back and see those things. Yeah, because they've done that in all the years they've been doing this. They'll show a picture of, like you said, like that Dre. I know exactly what you're talking about. But they'll show a picture of, you know, like just a desk covered with stuff, and you can kind of get little glimpses of stuff here and there. But if you don't know what you're looking for, it's like you're gonna, you know, really pick anything out of it. Yeah, that stuff's always cool because it gives you kind of little things to think about. And when they teased dinosaurs, then everybody was saying, oh, Turok, are they going to get the gold key properties back here? So you get all this speculation with that stuff. And, you know, and it sparks conversation. That's interesting conversation. The only thing that kind of drove me nuts about that specific one is then everybody's looking for ways to make, you know, analogies between stuff that is coming out and having to have something relate to all the gold key properties. Like, oh, well, Divinity is like Solar. Divinity ain't shit like Solar. I mean, he has, you know, more power than any other of the characters that we've seen like Solar did. But, and I mean, their origins were very different. How they use their power is very different. Their personalities and their attitudes are very different. I mean, Solar is just energy, you know. Divinity, like, has never been portrayed that way. So I think, you know, people start looking for ways to force it. And that I found kind of annoying. It's like, I don't need to be told that this thing that I'm reading that's great is, oh, well, they did this because it's this. No, it's not. It's this new thing that they did. So you don't have to make it fit into a little box just so that way you can, you know, compartmentalize everything.
I couldn't agree with you more because, you know, at first I wanted to have the Turox and the Solar and the Magnus back, but then they couldn't bring it into this universe. They would have to do another Unity to try to get it meshed in. And that's half-assed and stuff. And so what they're doing with Divinity and all these new characters, I like it because they have certain aspects of the old characters that they, you know, the go-key characters, but then they just made it better. Like you said, with the Divinity, they made it better. They weren't confined with the box of, okay, this is what Solar was, and this is what Magnus was, and this is what Turok was, and you can only work within that box. They were like, we're just going to make our own stuff and loosely base it off of them. I love it. I love what they're doing. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's more modernized of the older characters.
And they have more flexibility now.
You can take character elements, like, you know, basic elements from things, and it still be its own thing and not just be, you know, taking something and tweaking it a little bit, but doing the same thing, basically. It's like, you know, we were talking about Bloodshot Reborn, and they had the story arc that was basically like the Mad Max type of feel. And I saw somebody say, oh, well, they're just ripping off Old Man Logan. And this was in the Big Valiant Facebook group that I saw. I was like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. If you're going to say they're ripping something off, like, go back to the damn source material at least. Like, don't say they're ripping off something else that ripped off the, you know, like Old Man Logan was doing the same thing, like taking it from Mad Max. And Mad Max probably took that type of story from somewhere else. Mad Max is just kind of like
I think they said that too because Lemire was writing both at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, and yeah, I mean, the original Old Man Logan that was written by Mark Millar had that Mad Max feel to it.
Yeah.
I don't really know about the Lemire Old Man Logan. I don't think that did, right? Like, that wasn't that kind of a feel. It was Lemire's Old Man Logan was like Old Man Logan in current day, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but the Mark Millar one was old Mad Max style.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, you know, when people say, well, this is ripping this off, but, like, they're both coming from an older, or they're both being influenced by an older source material. Just like, you know, we were saying about Eternity and the thing from that other shitty thing that Shooter did. What was it called? Defiant?
Defiance, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like, both of those, the reason they're probably similar isn't because they're trying to copy Defiant, it's because they both are like drawing from the same source material of old Jack Kirby stuff, you know? So,
right.
Now, you can make a
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. You can go ahead.
That Bloodshot's Mad Max story arc, I thought that was a waste. Did you guys think that was just like filler? Like the one I was disappointed in.
Looking back on some of those stories now, I have a couple feelings about it. Like when I was reading them as they were coming out, I just enjoyed them. They were just enjoyable. That's all I really cared about. I was enjoying reading them. But I also don't read the same quantity of comics as a lot of other people. So I can see, like from Martin's perspective, where he reads, you know, his pull list is like 80 books a month or some shit. Like, that's crazy. Or it was then, at least, maybe even more. But so if you're reading that many comics, then you could say, like, I want my Bloodshot to be Bloodshot. And mm-hmm. I don't want it to, like, be anything else, you know? For me, I'm not reading that many different things. So if I'm reading Bloodshot and they take an arc and they go in a, you know, different place and tell a different kind of a story, it doesn't matter to me. I just enjoy it because I don't need my Bloodshot to stay in this little straight line. Looking back at it, those stories are much less consequential to me now, as if, you know, if it had been a continual build of a storyline. The positive side of some of those arcs, like that one, Bloodshot Island, Bloodshot USA, is they were fun stories that you didn't really have to know what came before or after to read them and enjoy them. And because they did have those elements of familiar stories to them, it was something that was approachable to outside readers to pick up something new and try it and get acquainted with a lot of these things. So I think that's the positive side of it. But in hindsight, like, you know, what you're saying about being disappointed, like I wouldn't say I was disappointed with it, but I totally get what you're saying too, that it doesn't have the same impact on me now as the first couple of arcs did that were, you know, really building off of the Valiant and growing a story and growing the characters and all that.
Yeah, I just thought they could have told that story in like a one issue and set up the next arc of Bloodshot Island. You know, that's how I took it. It's like, man, you really drug out this, you know, really. Because I was like you, Paul, I was in it when I read it. Like, oh, OK, this is interesting. They're taking this on a different tangent. How is this going to end up? And the way it ended up, I'm like, really? Really? Like you had me going there, and I mean that's smart on their part, but I was disappointed on it. I'm like, if you just
want to tell that story, it'll be interesting when I get to reading it in trade, because I've been building my Valiant trade library, and I haven't been reading through a whole lot yet because I've been trying to polish off some other stuff and kind of clear up a backstock of stuff that I have, but. You know, at some point, I'm going to start like rereading through everything that I'm building up. So it's going to be interesting when I get to the whole Bloodshot Reborn, and so on and so forth, and see how those stories read and trade. Because like I know I'm going to go back when I sticking with Bloodshot Reborn, those first couple of arcs where it's him hunting down the nanites basically. That was a great. Story, and that was very suspenseful and very building. You even got new characters added in there with is it Festival was the detective, was that her name, or was that the guy?
That's her name.
That's her name. Okay. You got her, who is she was a good character to add in, who they didn't make her hugely substantial, even though she's a big part of that story, but at some point they're gonna pull her back into other stuff and you're gonna be like, oh man, look at her get involved again. And then when I get up past that and get on to some of those other arcs, I can be like, I guess, I don't know. It won't be the same. It won't be as good as, rereading through that stuff.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. If you look at it in its totality, it'll be good. But at the time, I didn't like it, but I did like Reborn, and I'm liking Salvation.
Read Salvation 2 yet. I read the first issue, but I'm a little behind on reading stuff. But yeah, Jeff Lemire, writes character stories really well. He makes you care about characters very quickly. And I think that he did that in the first part of Bloodshot Reborn. And then, you know, the stuff he did after that, like, I don't know, it felt more like when I read when he writes Marvel titles or something like that, where you can tell he doesn't have the same love for it that he has for his, you know, his own projects. Like I just started reading Descender again. I just finished up the first trade of Descender, which I think is as far as I've read before. I don't think I've read past that until now. And when I read it the first time, I was reading it monthly, and it would just kind of got lost in the mix of everything else I was reading. You know, I liked it fine, but it wasn't like really hitting me, you know? Now reading it as a trade, yeah, it doesn't give you the chance to really, like, settle into this world that he's building, you know? But being able to read it as a trade, like, you really get the feel for the world, and you start to feel for the characters very quickly with Lemire stuff. But, you know, I mean, what's he doing now? So he's done with Marvel, right? And is he doing DC stuff now?
Yeah, he's doing a couple of titles at DC.
Hmm.
And then Salvation, obviously.
Yeah, he's got plenty of his own stuff going on, too. Descender's still going.
Yeah. What's this other book?
Black Hammer.
I love Black Hammer.
And then the spinoff to Black Hammer came out last week, I think.
Oh, what is that?
Oh, that's out? I lost track of when that was coming out.
It was something Frankenstein, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
To where it's actually Black Hammer's daughter, I think.
Ooh.
That's awesome. I'm excited to get more into that world. I read a little bit of Black Hammer, but same thing. There was just, you know, so many different things I was trying to keep up with and whatever. So now that I've, like, settled into trade reading, I dig it a lot more. But, yeah, the Black Hammer stuff and then seeing this new one coming out, I love it because it's, you know, it's Lemire's stuff, but it has a similar feel to a lot of the stuff that I like about the Hellboy world of stuff. You know, the art style, the coloring, the feel of the characters where they're, they're supernatural, but not at the same time, you know, like Hellboy is a demon child brought to the world, you know, but like, he's also this regular kind of guy, you know, who just happens to be, you know, super powerful and red, you know, but you can relate to him like a person too. And you can kind of relate to the struggles of coping with being who he is when he just wants to be, you know? And I think that Lemire stuff is kind of like that. Like, you can feel a connection with the characters.
Yeah, he does a good job.
Totally agree.
Yeah, he does an awesome job. Super awesome job. Yeah.
That book's called Sherlock Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil, is what that book's called.
That's right, Sherlock Frankenstein. Did you guys ever read, Jeff Lemire did a book for DC, and then it was actually taken over by Matt Kent. And it was, I'm trying to remember what it was called. It was Frankenstein something or other.
But Frankenstein, it was, Agent of Shade?
Yeah, that's it. That was a hell of a fun book.
That was a good book.
Yeah, and it was funny, too, just seeing it be Jeff Lemire handed off to Matt Kent, too. So, you know, two of my favorite writers. And that was, I want to say that was one of the, well, I guess Matt Kent hasn't really done a ton of stuff for the big two, but.
He did a Spider-Man book.
Yeah. He did that. He did the.
It's on Marvel Unlimited if you got it.
Yeah, I don't have it right now, but I did have it, like, saved in my library when I had it before, and then I just never got around to reading it.
Was it a Spider-Man book, you said?
Yeah, it's only, I think it's only, like, a six-page or a six-issue miniseries, but.
Yeah. It was.
I think it's, like, Spider-Man Reign or something. I'm looking it up right now. I pulled up my Unlimited.
It's kind of funny to see that, you know, those two guys, they're good friends. They've worked together on different stuff. It's kind of interesting seeing the difference in their careers, even with, like, the, you know, the closeness and a lot of the stuff that they've done. Yeah, their creator-owned stuff is very important to both of them. But like Matt Kent has just really made his niche in doing his own thing, and you know, a lot of creator-owned stuff and working for the smaller publishers. And Jeff Lemire, like, he keeps on doing his own stuff too, but then he also like always has his stuff going with the big two. Yeah, it's just kind of interesting to me. Did either of you guys read After Death?
I read the first issue and some of the second. It's just kind of a longer read for me, so I haven't got into it. But I bought them all. I haven't read them yet.
Yeah, I had to push through it, but I read through those. Martin and I actually talked about it some on our most recent Patreon-exclusive episode, which isn't out yet even. So you guys can, you know, become Patreons and then check that out, listeners. That should be coming out in, I guess, probably like a couple weeks. I know Martin just released the Gotham by Gaslight Patreon-exclusive episode not too long ago. But yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but Martin, same thing. He hadn't finished it. They're heavy. They're playing with structure a lot. One of the things that struck me about it is Scott Snyder writes it, and Jeff Lemire does the artwork. So, you know, my draw for it, obviously, is Jeff Lemire. You know, although I like Scott Snyder fine, like, I enjoyed his Batman. Yeah, reading it, I'm just like, man, this would be so much better if Jeff Lemire wrote it, because in all the words that Scott Snyder uses to tell that story, he doesn't make you care about the characters as much as Jeff Lemire can with like five words and some well-drawn panels.
Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah,
Spider-Man Fight Night. That sounds like something Matt Kent would write. Spider-Man
Fight Night.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Spider-Man Fight Night. I gotta look that up, guys. Gotta look it up.
Yeah. Well, you guys want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. It's getting kind of late here, and I guess my wife has food poisoning, so it's been an interesting evening here in this stormy Maine weather right now. But, you know, real quick question before we wrap up. Final thoughts from you guys. Aside from Valiant, we know we all read Valiant stuff. What is something that you're reading that's like one of your favorite things? It doesn't even have to be a current book, but you know, even a couple of things. What things are really floating your boats right now?
For Valiant?
Just anything. We'll stay outside of Valiant. We all know we dig Valiant and what we're reading in Valiant. We talk about that plenty. But for me, like I said, I'm starting to go through and read some of these series that I've been wanting to read for a long time and reading them in trades. So just, you know, really staying focused on a series. And I just started Descender. I finished the first trade and I started on the second trade tonight. And I'm really digging that. Oh God, what the hell did I just finish up? I just finished up something else that I really liked. It feels really good doing that, just really digging into a series instead of, you know, floating around from issue to issue sometimes. They're both good things, but I just got all three hardcovers of Sweet Tooth. So that's one that I have on deck, too, to read is all of Lemire's Sweet Tooth, which is one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. So what about you, Duan? What have you been reading, aside from Valiant, that excites you?
I like Thanos Steel. I'm trying to catch up with that. I like that. And Baby Teeth.
That was the one that Lemire was writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, before he got off.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like it a lot. And Baby Teeth.
By Donny Cates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever read Ghost Fleet by Donny Cates?
Mm-mm.
You should give that a shot.
Yeah, I have a feeling Martin would like Ghost Fleet. Just a crazy hunch there.
Yeah, I think so.
We talked about that quite a bit, actually, too, on the Patreon episode was Ghost Fleet. And that's one of the things. It was mostly a Hoopla episode, talking about Hoopla and the positives of it. And it's free, so people should take advantage of it. But, Donny Cates is interesting. I think you guys have told me that Baby Teeth isn't really up my alley, but I've been digging Donny Cates. I might have to check that one out when I can get my hands on it, because I've been hearing a lot of good about it from a lot of people. Thanos, though, I know. I think that's one of the ones that Jack really digs. I'll have to check that one out, too. I kind of got I shied off of Jeff Lemire's Marvel stuff. After a while, the first Hawkeye stuff that he did just really didn't draw me in, so I kind of backed off. And then the X-Men he was doing, I read the first issue and just like, nope, not reading this X-Men.
Yeah.
What about you, Ronnie? So I'm assuming Baby Teeth is probably up there on your list.
Baby Teeth is up there on my list, and other Donny Cates books that are coming out, like Redneck and God Country.
Oh, Redneck. Oh. He has Redneck. Yeah. I've heard of Redneck, but I didn't. The name didn't mean anything to me at the time, so I didn't, didn't make the connection. God Country is good, though. I read that the first volume of that, and that was good.
Yep.
Yeah.
God Country is good.
And I'm going back on one of our favorite writers and rereading Echo again from Terry Moore.
I gotta get diving in. I've been bad about Terry Moore. I've been keeping up with Motor Girl. The last issue is coming out next month. But I have the omnibus for Strangers in Paradise. And I have the omnibus for Echo, and I need to maybe I'll just hit Echo first because it's the shorter series, obviously, and then I'll start digging into Strangers. I would kind of like to get through all of Strangers in Paradise before it relaunches in January with the next series. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, Terry Moore's good. Motor Girl has just been fantastic.
What?
Yeah, Motor Girl's like one of my favorite books out right now.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
It's like I know this isn't what this podcast is about, but like you think it's like going to be corny and cheesy, and then it's like gut punch after gut punch.
Yeah, you know, that's I talked about this with somebody at some point on a podcast, but it's been a while, so I don't remember when or what. But I mean, it starts out, you pick up this comic book and it has this, you know, like gorilla on the cover, and then you see these like really cartoony aliens. So like you go into it expecting like lighthearted cheesiness. And then even that very first issue, you read it and like you get a lot of that. But then when you get the serious thread in it, it just because you get set up for it to be so like lighthearted and loose, then those serious things just jab you so hard, and it gets heavier and heavier as you go in the book, man.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining me. Thank you also for carrying the podcast while my internet was going in and out. You guys, of course, are always welcome to join us. And if you want to join us in a few weeks for the 150th episode, we'll be getting the details put together for that soon. I know I was talking to a couple other guys today who hopefully will also be on it. But you can find us on Twitter. The podcast is at Valiant_Central. You can tweet Martin at Geekvine. I am at Who's Paul. You can find Ronnie on Twitter at RonBar316. Check out his other podcasts on Nerdy Legions, such as Open Bar with Dewan and whoever else joins whenever they do it. As well as, what do you guys call the DC podcast now?
Absolute DC.
Absolute DC, the Ultimate Marvel podcast. Aftershock Central, which has the most unoriginal podcast name. Are we getting a Dynamite Central? Did I see Martin tweet about that?
Oh, somebody tweeted about it, and I asked about it in our private chat.
Okay. People need to stop ripping off my name. Podcast of 1,000 Holds. Do you do any other ones, Ronnie?
Nope, that's it.
Aftershock Central. Oh, I said Aftershock Central, but
yeah.
So Ronnie's involved in a whole bunch of podcasts. And then Dewan, of course, is part of the Collecting Valiant podcast. So if you don't get enough Valiant talk in this podcast, which would not surprise me, then you can check out that podcast where he is joined by Justin Ehart and James Carlson as they talk about the collecting side of being a Valiant fan. And you can tweet them for the podcast at Collecting Valiant. Is that what it is?
I think it's at Collect Valiant.
At Collect Valiant. I thought it was a little bit different. So that's where you can find all of us. Hit up the Patreon, patreon.com/ValiantCentral. Go to nerdylegion.com. You can also find the link there. And find all the other wonderful podcasts I just mentioned and more. Martin should be back next time, and until then, go read some Motor Girl and Thanos and shit.